Hello, this is Debbie back again with part two of the e-edition of the Decatur Herald and Review on Wednesday, July 6, 2016, beginning part two as we normally do with the obituaries. Douglas, Susan K., Decatur. Susan K. Douglas, 65 of Springfield, passed away after a year-long battle with cancer. She passed on Saturday, July 2, 2016, at Memorial Medical Center with her family by her side. Cremation rites will be accorded by Cremation Services of Central Illinois and Chatham before services. Her memorial service will be held at 1 p.m. Saturday, July 9th at the First United Methodist Church, 2941 Coca Mill Road, Springfield, with Pastor Nicole Cox officiating. A celebration of Susan's life will immediately follow the service until 4 at the church. Community Life Center. Susan requested a casual reception to allow her family and friends to share her life stories. For those who wish, memorial contributions may be made to the John Wesley Schools in Liberia in care of the First United Methodist Church in Springfield or Autism Society of Central Illinois, 5220 South 6th Street Road, Springfield, Illinois. Stab Polk Memorial Home, Chatham, is serving Susan's family. Nalewski, Norman Paul, Decatur. Norman Paul Nalewski, age 89, of Normal, Illinois, and formerly of Decatur, Illinois, passed away at 7:50 p.m. on Sunday, July 3, 2016, at Heritage Health Center, Normal. His funeral service will be 10 a.m. Thursday, July 7th, at Trinity Lutheran Church, Bloomington. Pastor Thomas C. Wiersing and Pastor Terry Strom will be officiating. His graveside service will be at 2 p.m. Thursday at St. John's Lutheran Cemetery, Decatur. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 Wednesday, that's tonight, at Calvert Metzler Memorial Home, Bloomington, and from 9 to 10 Thursday at the church. In lieu of flowers, families suggest memorials be made to the Northeast Community Fund Building Fund. The Northeast Community Fund Building Fund, Decatur, Illinois. Sunderland, Doris Nadine, Decatur. Doris Nadine Sunderland, 91, of Decatur, passed away at 1:45 p.m. Sunday, July 3, 2016, on her 91st birthday at Symphony of Decatur with her family by her side. Funeral service to celebrate her life will be 11 a.m. Thursday, July 7, 2016, in Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Visitation will be 1 hour before the services in the funeral home. Casual attire is requested. Burial will follow in Graceland Cemetery. Memorials may be made to the DMH Hospice. Decatur, Heffington, Kenneth. Kenneth Heffington, 77, of Decatur, passed away on Thursday, June 30th, in his own home. Visitation will be held from 6 to 8, Friday, July 8th, in Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Graveside services to celebrate Kenneth's life will be 11 a.m. Saturday, July 9th, in Graceland Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be directed to the Cancer Care Specialist of Decatur. Maroa, Tangi, Tangney, T-A-N-G-N-E-Y, Mary Patricia. Mary Patricia Jarvis Tangney, 83, of Etowa, North Carolina, formerly of Maroa, passed away June 13th at her daughter's home with her family by her side. A graveside service will be held Saturday, July 9th at 10:30 a.m. at Maroa Township Cemetery. The family requests that in lieu of flowers, donations be made to the Habitat for Humanity. Decatur, Wilder, T.C. T.C. Topcat Wilder, Senior, 88, of Decatur, was called to be with his Lord on Friday, July 1, 2016. Services celebrating his life will be held at noon Saturday, July 9, 2016, at the House of Faith, Church of God in Christ, with Pastor Embra R. Patterson III officiating. Visitation, 1 hour before service. Burial, Greenwood Cemetery. Professional services entrusted to Walker Funeral Service. Decatur, Channer Elzora. Elzora Hubble Channer, 99, Decatur, died Sunday, July 3, 2016. Body was donated to science. Burial at a later date, Fairlawn Cemetery. Arrangements by Moran and Goebel Funeral Home. Memorials to DMH Home Health and Hospice Services. Decatur, Nalewski, Norman Paul. Excuse me, I have read that one. St. Elmo, Hazlitt, Kenneth V. St. Elmo. Kenneth V. Cap Hazlitt, age 100, of St. Elmo, passed away 3:17 p.m. on Saturday, July 2nd, at HSHS St. Anthony's Memorial Hospital, Effingham. Funeral services will be held 11 a.m. on Wednesday, July 6th, at Pagel Funeral Home in St. Elmo. Jim Griffin will be officiating. Burial will follow in Maplewood Cemetery in St. Elmo. Casual affair is requested for both the visitation and funeral service. Visitation will be held from 5 to 8, was held 5 to 8 on Tuesday, July 5th, with Masonic rites. In lieu of flowers, memorial contributions may be made to the St. Elmo Educational Foundation. Post Office Box 82, St. Elmo, Illinois. Sullivan. Walter Kenneth Kenny Cap, 71, of Sullivan, passed away at 7:35 a.m. Friday, July 1st, 2016, in his residence. Celebration of life services will be at 3 p.m. Sunday in Reed Funeral Home, Sullivan, with Pastor Grant Wade officiating. Visitation will be from 1 p.m. until service time on Sunday. Memorials are suggested to St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. And that concludes the death notices for Wednesday, July 6, 2016, as recorded in the e-edition of the Decatur Herald and Review. Continuing on, small little note, Elk Nuzzles Firefighters. Clay Ellum, Washington, AP. An affectionate elk paid some Washington State firefighters a visit over the holiday weekend as they worked to tame a wildfire. The orphaned elk, dubbed Buttons by the locals, is a fixture in the Catoosa County, where she took up residence with some cows and goats on a hillside. Catoosa County Fire District spokeswoman Rochelle Ridson said as she arrived at the scene Saturday to see the elk nuzzling up to everyone in the command post area and resting her head on people's shoulders. And on another page is one more obituary. Bethany Yarnell. So in Bethany, William Roger Yarnell, 74, of Bethany, went to meet Jesus Monday, July 4th, 2016 at 12:12 a.m. in his home with his wife Sue by his side. A memorial celebration will start at 1 p.m. Saturday, July 9th, 2016, followed by a visitation with the family until 4 at the Vineyard Church, Sullivan. Memorials may be made to the Bethany American Legion, Bethany First Christian Church, or to the donor's choice. McMullen Young Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. And that is the end of the obituary. On that same page, on Section D, Health Med Fitness. Therapy with Disabled Furry Friend is Ticket to Recovery. The headline on the print version says, In Comes the Doggy Brigade. This is by Teresa Cotham, Tribune News Service writer out of Akron, Ohio. Jack Lehman doesn't remember being in the intensive care unit. He doesn't remember lying in bed with a feeding tube or ventilator. Even his memory of his 15th birthday a couple days ago, before he was admitted to Akron Children's Hospital is hazy. A sudden onset of acute disseminated encephalomyelitis, ADEM, left Jack in pain, paralyzed and without memory of the incident. One thing it left him with, though, is a bond he will always remember. Jack, the son of Jeff and Janie Lehman of Hudson, Ohio, spent 77 days at Akron Children's Hospital, relearning how to balance and walk with the help of therapy dogs that are part of the hospital's Doggy Brigade program. On Jack's birthday on February 20th, he began feeling flu-like symptoms. By the time he was admitted to the hospital on February 22nd, just 2 days later, he was too weak to even step out of the car on his own. ADEM is a rare autoimmune disorder that inflames the brain and spinal cord, causing neurological symptoms like vision loss, weakness, and difficult coordinating voluntary muscle movements. It often follows viral bacterial infections, but doctors do not know the exact cause of Jack's case. Most patients start recovering in a couple of days and see a full recovery in 6 months. Jack's case, though, left him relying on machines to live. People do die from this illness, and he had a pretty severe version of it, said Dr. Michael Bigham, a pediatric intensivist at Akron Children's. He was pretty doggone sick. After spending 35 days on a ventilator and 38 in the ICU, Jack finally began inpatient physical and occupational therapy sessions. The sessions were intense, but he got by with a little help from his furry friends. The hospital's Doggy Brigade program is the second oldest volunteer pet program in the country. Established in 1992, the program now hosts more than 50 dogs that go through intense training to get there. For kids like Jack, it makes the rehabilitation process a lot more fun. It's been amazing, he said. I can't thank the dogs enough. Jack's exercises vary by day. Some may be simple as walking a dog on a leash, while others are more difficult, like balancing on a rocker while reaching for a treat to pass off to a hungry pooch. From wheelchair to walker to cane, the dogs have been with Jack every step of the way. I've seen these dogs work miracles. They have such a motivating presence, Jack said. Dogs with Disabilities, says a little sub-headline in this article. Jack has spent his therapy sessions working with Chris Witschey, who has volunteered at the hospital 5 days a week for the past 10 years. Of all the dogs that volunteer at Akron Children's, Witschey's bring a little different specialty. So many of her dogs have handicaps. Witschey first began volunteering in 2005 with Handsome, a deaf Australian Shepherd Rottweiler mix. She found the kids she worked with not only had fun with Handsome, but also related better with him because of his disability. Once I started seeing how kids related to a deaf dog, I started looking for a three-legged one, Witschey said. It's a bit of normality in a scary place. She now has 7 dogs totaled, all rescue, 4 of which she brings to the hospital. One of them is deaf, one is blind, and one has 3 legs. Old dog, lots of tricks is the next sub-headline. Despite their handicaps, Witschey's dogs know about every trick in the book. Most of them even understand American Sign Language. You can teach them anything, but you can't teach them disposition, Witschey said. Each dog has distinct personalities, and each one is better at different things, Witschey said. Tank loves food more than anyone else on the earth. I could feed him treats all day, Jack said. Gracie loves to be petted. Now that Jack is up and walking with a cane, he will only attend therapy once a week somewhere closer to his Hudson home. By August, he'll be up and marching in band camp. For now, though, Jack is enjoying his final days with the Akron Hounds. He is currently helping Witschey teach her newest volunteer dog sign language. Dogs are always listening and always understanding, Jack said. They make any therapy session better. End of that article. Okay, back to local in Section A. Alleged serial thief batters boy. This is by Tony Reed of the H&R staff. A serial thief from Decatur, who is also accused of verbally threatening and physically battering a 3-year-old boy, is now lodged in jail facing multiple charges. In the battery case, sworn police statements say Jack A. Miller, 33, was inside the Sprint store at 245 East Ash Avenue in Decatur on June 22nd when employees heard him threaten the boy. Jack told him several times he was going to cut his tongue out of his mouth, the statements allege. They also claimed he told the crying child he'd blister his buttocks by hitting him with a belt. He was then seen taking the child outside to the parking lot where he wanted him to urinate, which the boy couldn't do. The statements say Miller then marched him back inside the store, and as they hit him in the back of the head so hard the boy was knocked off his feet and propelled 18 inches across the floor. Police who say the alleged violence was captured on surveillance camera later arrested Miller and booked him on charges of aggravated battery to a child under 13 and domestic battery. The charges related to the alleged theft date to May 24th when it claimed Miller went on a more than $4,000 spending spree in little more than an hour with two stolen debit cards. Police say Miller obtained the cards from a stolen wallet that had been taken from a theft victim by the victim's ex-wife. It alleged the former husband allowed her into his home around midnight, May 23rd, and later noticed the wallet was gone. He told the police the women knew the cards' PIN numbers. Miller's alleged spending spree began at 1:46 a.m. May 24th and involved 14 purchases of electronic goods and other supplies for amounts up to $950. The ex-wife allegedly told police she was with Miller when he made the purchases, but claimed she didn't know how he had obtained the debit cards. Miller, who is facing identity theft and retail theft charge, also is accused of walking out of the Forsyth Menards store on June 10th with a cordless nail gun, valued at $400, which he made no attempt to pay for. Miller remained held without bond. End of that article. Continuing local with government and politics, Sweeney appeals lawsuit against City of Decatur. This is by Allison Patty. Decatur. Former Decatur Police Chief Brad Sweeney is appealing a Macon County judge's dismissal of his lawsuit against the City of Decatur. Sweeney's attorney, John Robinson, filed a notice of appeal last week in the case, which will proceed to the 4th District Appellate Court, Macon County Circuit Court, Macon County Circuit Judge A.G. Weber IV dismissed the lawsuit June 7th. Obviously, we feel the decision was not correct, and so therefore, as we indicated earlier, we are making the appeal to the 4th District, Robinson said, declining to comment further. Sweeney alleges he was wrongfully fired February 4th by city manager Tim Gleason. Specifically, he said, Gleason retaliated against him for his refusal to publicly support a local motor fuel tax, opposition to the tax during a city staff meeting, and objection to Gleason's use of a police car and driver for a personal trip in May 2015. In court documents, Gleason gave other reasons for firing Sweeney that did not relate to the gas tax or police car. Further, the city argued that Sweeney participated in Gleason's use of the car and therefore could not claim protection under the Illinois Whistleblowers Act. Weber wrote in his decision the ruling was based on Sweeney's lack of legal standing for the case, not on what kind of job Sweeney had done as police chief. Ultimately, Weber found that the Decatur police chief is an at-will employee who could be discharged by the city at any time for reason or no reason, and that Sweeney's allegations were not sufficient to be covered under any exception to those rules. Ed Flynn, one of the attorneys representing the city, declined to comment Tuesday. On to the local briefs. Decatur local briefs for Wednesday, July 6. Decatur. Packing plant fire. A downed electrical line that sent power surging through the roof line of a Decatur meat packing plant caused damage estimated at $18,000 Tuesday morning. Firefighters were called to Henkel's Packing Company at 2005 North 22nd Street at 6:12 a.m. after a semi-truck making deliveries snagged the power line, which, sparking and flashing, electrified the building's metal skin. Firefighters had to wait for Ameren Illinois crews to shut off the electricity and then began searching the roof area of the 34,000 square foot building to locate numerous hot spots where melted metal had scorched and burned wooden elements of the structure. Firefighters said the damage figures preliminary is likely to climb higher. Nobody was hurt during the incident, which had crews on the scene for 2 hours. Next, Blue Mound. Driver identified. Police said a 19-year-old Mawiqua driver was at the wheel of a vehicle that left the road and crashed on its side near Blue Mound Sunday afternoon. Follow-up reports from the Macon County Sheriff's Office named the driver as Lauren Capper. She suffered minor injuries, as did her 2-year-old son and a 17-year-old female passenger from Assumption. Police said Capper had been westbound on Blue Mound Road when her vehicle plowed into two ditches before sliding sideways into a tree. Capper had since been ticketed for allegedly driving without insurance and failing to reduce speed to avoid an accident. Next, Decatur. Gun found in cooler. A suspected drug dealer who allegedly tried to smuggle a gun through Illinois by submerging it in a water-filled cooler didn't get far, according to police. Sworn statements say Decatur detectives pulled over the 22-year-old Ohio man's vehicle Monday afternoon in the eastbound lane of Interstate 72. A police dog alerted to cannabis and it alleged a gram of the drug was found in a sandwich bag in the glove box. Police then said they fished the sunken 9mm semi-automatic handgun out of the cooler. Officers said they also discovered a magazine with 15 live rounds in the vehicle's glove box, and the suspect, who has no gun permit, was booked on a charge of aggravated unlawful use of a weapon. Police allege seized drug paraphernalia, including a Food Saver machine and vacuum seal packaging, indicate the suspect, who was returning home from Oregon, had mailed himself a package of drugs. An investigation into that aspect of the case continues, and the U.S. Postal Inspectors have been alerted. Decatur, beer fight nets charge. Angered over a woman's talking trash about her daughter, police said a Decatur mother pulled the woman's head back by her hair and poured a glass of beer over her on Saturday night. Sworn statements say the incident occurred at Slider's Bar in Decatur, and the 46-year-old suspect was later arrested by Macon County Sheriff's Office deputies and booked on charges of aggravated battery and disorderly conduct. The deputy said the suspect expressed surprise at her arrest and told him she was not aware she could get in trouble for just dumping a beer on her. The 22-year-old victim told police she didn't want to pursue charges because she was now in fear of my safety. End of that little note. Then on to Decatur Purple Heart Scholarships. The Military Order of the Purple Heart Chapter 159 and its auxiliary are taking applications for two $250 academic scholarships. Applicants must have received or be directly related to a person who has received a Purple Heart. They must also be full-time high school seniors enrolled in an accredited college or in the first year of a postgraduate program. Applications must be received by Friday, July 15th. For more information or to apply, contact Melanie Shaler at 871-8254. Mattoon. Parolee arrested on warrant. A local man who was on parole for murder has been taken into custody on arrest warrant. A Mattoon Police Department news release reported that officers from the department, the U.S. Marshals Service, and Coles County Probation Office arrested Charles C. Drum, 46, of Mattoon at 8 a.m. Friday in the Westwood subdivision of Mattoon after searching several weeks for him. Drum was wanted on a Coles County warrant of arrest. The charges alleged that he battered a woman in Mattoon. In addition, Drum has been charged with a violation of his parole. That charge alleges that Drum was on parole from prison for murder at the time the new offense was allegedly committed. Drum was taken to the Coles County Jail. In 2001, Drum was convicted in Mattoon resident Shane Ellison's January 4, 1997 beating and strangulation death. He was one of three co-defendants in the case. And that's the end of the little local briefs. And a couple articles on A5. Joliet displays Civil War flag used by Will County Regiment. This is out of Joliet. A flag used in the Civil War by Illinois' 100th Volunteer Infantry Regiment is on display at the Joliet Area Historical Museum after it was conserved to prevent further deterioration. Workers spent 230 hours to clean the flag's strands and remove fragments of dirt. The museum had a ceremony last week to commemorate the success of the project to bring the flag to Will County. The Herald News reported the regiment that used the flag was called the Will County Regiment. The Union flag has the names of the 16 engagements where it was carried into battle, including Mission Ridge and Chickamauga. The flag is on loan from the Illinois State Military Museum. Joliet Township contributed $20,000 of the $25,000 spent on the project. Next article, Man Passing on Delavan's History. Delavan Man Preserves Delavan Man Preserves Underground Railroad Sites. This is by Nick McMillan of the Pekin Daily Times, out of Delavan, AP. Glenn Holmes will talk about Delavan's history to anyone willing to listen. But the Delavan native and historical society member is finding fewer and fewer people wanting to hear about this town's rich history, especially among the younger generations. Our society is an old group of people, and we need young people to keep it going. If we don't get them in a few years, it'll die out. It'll go. It's unfortunate, really, because we have a world of history here. Over years of time and devotion, Holmes has worked to preserve 7 Delavan historic landmarks. We're proud of our artifacts. We want to show them off, Holmes said. You got to get people's interests first. Once you get people's interest, then you can do anything you want to do. One thing you get to do is talk it up and get their interest to where they will help you. One mission Holmes is on is to properly mark 2 Underground Railroad spots and potentially get them listed on the National Register of Historical Places. The sites, now empty fields, were once the homes of Daniel Cheever and George Teft. Cheever and Teft played crucial roles in aiding the escape of several runaway slaves as they made their way through Tazewell County. There's not much documented because they didn't write too much about the runaway slave houses. They kept it pretty quiet, Holmes said. We know on several occasions Abraham Lincoln visited the Cheever house. We know on the third floor there were false walls and the people stayed in there so they could move around the house until it was safe to get outside. The 2 Delavan Underground Railway sites are among several sites throughout Tazewell County. There are other sites in Tremont, Mackinac, and Washington. Along with his work on the Underground Railroad, Holmes was instrumental in establishing the Lincoln Mile. The mile is a path around Delavan of 10 sites that have an attachment to the 16th president. Lincoln rode through Delavan several times when he was a circuit lawyer in the early mid-1800s. The mile is marked by wooden Lincoln heads atop posts. There are a lot of people that don't know about Lincoln and his involvement in Delavan, Holmes said. A lot of people think you have to go to Springfield to learn about Lincoln, but you don't. He was right here in Delavan. Recently, as part of an annual field trip, Holmes took Delavan fourth graders on the Lincoln Mile. I do it every year, and the kids just love it, Holmes said. You have to get them interested in it because hopefully they'll be the next one to preserve our history. For Holmes, the hope of instilling the same love of his town's history in the next generation is his ultimate goal. Somebody will take my place in the future, and I hope these kids will, Holmes said. I love Delavan, and I'll talk to anyone wanting a history program done. I'll do it. End of that article. Washington, to end this section 2. Guns, immigration, and Zika. Zika, top agenda as Congress returns. This is AP out of Washington. Gun control, immigration, and money to combat the Zika virus top the congressional agenda as lawmakers sprint toward the political conventions this month in a 7-week summer recess. Amid all that, Republicans plan to squeeze in a meeting with Donald Trump on Thursday. The House and Senate have just 8 legislative days before their break, and lawmakers have scheduled a handful of politically charged votes with implications for incumbents in November's election. In the House, legislation to fight terrorism and a gun control measure that already failed in the Senate are planned for this week. House Speaker Paul Ryan said a GOP plan to keep suspected terrorists from obtaining firearms would do so without compromising a citizen's basic Bill of Rights, including the rights to bear arms and receive the due process under the law. In the Senate, immigration bills and legislation to impose labeling on genetically modified food are on tap. Unclear is whether Republicans and Democrats can resolve the dispute over funds for the mosquito-borne Zika virus now that summer's in full swing, or whether the matter will have to wait till September when Congress returns. A look at the issues. Zika. Back in February, President Barack Obama requested $1.9 billion in emergency money to fight Zika, which causes grave birth defects and has infected 287 pregnant women in the U.S. and 250 in U.S. territories, according to the most recent numbers from the Centers for Disease Control. Congress has failed to fund the request as the issue has been caught up in partisan fights and the typical dysfunction. House Republicans rammed through a bill that would provide $1.1 billion by cutting money from other government agencies. The legislation to the anger of Democrats would bar new funding for Planned Parenthood clinics in Puerto Rico and allow pesticide spraying that environmentalists argue would be harmful. And this is the end of Part 2, Decatur Herald and Review, E-Edition, read to you by Debbie on Wednesday, July 6, 2016. Looking forward to talking to you again next week.